You must tell me all your secrets. Remember, we must share everything together.
Again, this is Annie Rose Malamut, and you're listening to Girls, Guts, and Giallo. I'm here today with Donika Uskert talking about one of my all-time favorite films I've wanted to do since I started the podcast, In the Realm of the Senses. And Donika, hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Donika, can you tell the listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do, what you're all about? You look amazing, by the way. They can't see that, but I needed everybody to know.
Thank you so much. Well, I'm a mixed race Asian American video and performance artist, and my work has screened at Porn Film Festival Berlin, Porn Film Festival Vienna, Vault Festival in the UK, and some other international venues. I was also an executive producer on a queer Filipino-American home for the holidays dark comedy directed by H.P. Mendoza called Bitter Melon. I'm an associate producer of the documentary I Know Catherine on the late Catherine Coulson of Twin Peaks fame. What else have I got going on? Oh, I'm the editor-in-chief of Film and Fishnets, filmandfishnet.com, which is a sex and cinema blog. And let's see, I have a graphic novel with trans illustrator Annie Mock called Unsustainable about an obsessive romantic relationship.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Very apropos.
And I'm also, my day job is I'm a sex educator and manager at Hustler Hollywood. So
amazing. Oh my God. That's your dog Elvira in the background, who's very cute. You're really fucking cool. And I'm really excited to have you on to talk about this movie.
Thank you. I'm excited to be on. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. So let's talk about In the Realm of the Senses. Before we get into the film, I wanted to ask you what is your relationship to this movie? When did you first see it, and what did you feel about it when you first saw it?
So I first saw this film in grade school, for better or worse, and I think it shaped my romantic yearnings since then. But as far as my connection to the film, I'm very interested in the historical case, the actual historical case, and I feel a very deep connection with Abisada because both of us were raped at 15, and we kind of chose to go into sex work after that because we were both dealing with the conventional morality associated with our upbringing, and we both felt sort of rejected from the mainstream. So
yeah, that's thank you for sharing that. I am a rape survivor and former sex worker as well, so I deeply, deeply relate to this story on that level. And yeah, I'm just really thrilled that I get to talk about it with somebody who has that similar experience to me. And I think, yeah, this is a really, I mean, it's a hard movie, but it's also a really beautiful meditation on desire and love. And I think I first saw this movie, I don't even remember when I first saw this movie, but I was just immediately like in love with it, in love with the performances, in love with the film language. And it inspired me to look more into specifically Japanese sex cinema. So before we get into this film specifically, I wanted to talk a little bit about Japanese sex cinema. And I'm getting the bulk of my knowledge from the book Behind the Pink Curtain by Jasper Sharp.
I have it.
Amazing. Yeah, it's a really gorgeous book. It's like a complete history of Japanese sex cinema. And he's got like full color photos in here from a lot of films that don't exist anymore, which is really amazing. So Japanese sex cinema arises in the mid 1960s. It's born out of There were, you know, the so-called eroduction genre in Japan, where there was kind of, you know, erotic films with this like educational safe sex bent on it. And it's not until the mid-1960s that there starts to be this more experimental, politically driven genre of sex cinema, which is born out of a culmination of political and cultural circumstances, like the rise of modernism in Japan post-World War II, communism, and the American and European experimental films of the 1960s, many of which are inspired by Japanese avant-garde cinema. So they're very much in conversation with each other. And I was under the impression that like all Japanese sex cinema is considered pink film. But a pink film is actually what I learned from this book is that a pink film is actually a very specific kind of Japanese sex film, which like is characterized by low budget. They're art house films made specifically by politically progressive directors that combine sex and experimental filmmaking techniques to comment on larger political issues. And then there's the Roman porno series by the production company Nikatsu, which was very much inspired by the success of pink films. And those are high budget pornographic films, softcore pornographic films, just because of the Japanese censorship laws around actually showing hardcore sex. And those are high budget films with elaborate sets. And then there's films that are kind of outliers, like the one that we're talking about today, which in the book, Jasper Sharp calls them Eros International films, which were made by Japanese directors, but typically distributed by European production companies, such as Gala, that allowed directors to make racier films than Japanese censorship would allow. So pink films work within the confines of Japanese censorship laws. This film does not, because it doesn't have to, because it was distributed by a European company. Japanese sex films were quite popular over in Europe because of, I mean, Europeans love their porn, but also because of very orientalist views of Eastern sexuality and exoticism that allowed for these films to enjoy popularity, because that is how the viewers imagined Japan to be anyway. So it was kind of, it was very like titillating for these viewers. The history of Japanese sex films released in the US, those films are better preserved, because porn auteurs loved them and preserved them, like Radley Metzger and his company Autobahn, which released and preserved a few Japanese sex films. So now that we've, now that I've talked a little bit about that background, let's talk about the production of In the Realm of the Senses. So this film comes out in 1976. It's directed by Nagisa Oshima, starring Aiko Matsuda as Abasada and Tatsuo Fugi as Kichi. And there's, I wanted to also, some people that get left out a lot when talking about the production are the music, the composer Minoru Miki, and the costume designer Masahiro Kato and Shigemasa Tota. I wanted to point that out because this film would not be what it is without the music and the costuming. Nagisa Oshima is one of the more famous directors of the era, and he based this film on the actual case of Abasada. And I was wondering, Danica, if you wanted to talk a little bit about that case and what happened there.
Well, what I find pretty interesting is how closely the film follows the record of her interrogation. Much of the dialogue is directly from the report. So, I mean, it doesn't really deviate much from what happened in the film. We had a woman, Abesada, who was a waitress at a restaurant who had an affair with her employer. She was also a sex worker. They had a very torridly passionate love affair, and she was very, very obsessed with him, and she couldn't bear to part with him or think of him leaving her to return to his wife. So while they were in the middle of their tryst, their sex and their play had become increasingly BDSM oriented. And Kichi got injured during the play. He was on some sedatives, and one night while he was on a lot of sedatives, she asphyxiated him and cut off his penis and then went around carrying it with her until she was caught. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's the story has been adapted a few times by a few different directors. Nagisa Oshima specifically was a very, vocal critic of state control, not just film censorship. In the Realm of the Senses, it's commonly believed that Oshima was prosecuted for obscenity because of the film, but he was actually prosecuted for the book containing the script, which also had these full, beautiful, glossy, full color stills in it. It was shot at, I believe you pronounce it, Dai Studios in Kyoto with an all Japanese cast, but the film was a French funded production. So the film stock was imported from France, and the unexposed, obscene, quote unquote, obscene footage was filmed by Oshima and shipped back to Europe for processing. So basically the story, the way that this film got made is Oshima, he went on these various trips to the Cannes Film Festival, and he meets European producer Anatoly Doman, and Doman had his own company, Argos Films. which produced quote unquote literary cinema, which is basically specialized in the work of producing auteurs, specifically erotic films. I have a quote from Oshima here where he says, "It was the end of the summer of 1972. I stopped over in Paris on the way home from the Venice Film Festival, where I had taken Dear Summer Sister," another one of his films. Domen suddenly came out with it in the anteroom of a small private showing room called Club 70. "Let's collaborate on a film, a co-production, a porno. I'll leave the content and the actual production all to you. I'll pay for it. That's all." Domen says that he never said the word pornographic, but like, who cares? He already produced the film Immoral Tales, which is...
I love that movie.
I love that film too. It's so gorgeous and it's porn. And that's what he was known for. Oshima was having difficulty finding funding in Japan for his transgressive cinema. So he jumped on the opportunity. He wrote two treatments. But the one that Domon opted for was the one on based on the Abasada case, which you've summarized for us. The incident was very shocking. But something I found interesting was that Sada actually received a great deal of public sympathy.
What I love, there's like this fantastic detail of how much, like, I mean, people were already in awe even before the transcript was released to the public. The cops waited for her to put on her makeup before they took her to the station. They let her put on a full face. In all of the photos in the newspapers, she's smiling with the cops. Like,
oh my God, what a queen.
Yeah.
Obsessed. <She's involved. laughs> I mean, just so much like sex worker feelings. Like, you got to put on your makeup before you.
Yeah, exactly.
And her impoverished background kind of made her this sympathetic character. The intense affair between Sada and Kichi, which was conducted openly in front of his wife. Jasper Sharp says in this book that it might have been seen as this equal union between a man and a woman, a moment of liberation played out in a realm wholly indifferent to the chauvinistic apparatus of a society in which many women are essentially little more than chattel. He believes that that's why this resonated so much with people. Sada was mythologized as a source of fascination and danger to men, while also becoming something of a feminist icon. Oshima says that Sada's name is so popular in Japan that it suffices to pronounce it to touch on the most serious sexual taboos. It is quite natural that a Japanese artist would want to dedicate this work to that marvelous woman. So this film is very much kind of a tribute and a love letter to her. And have you seen the Noboru Tanaka film, A Woman Called Sada Abe?
I have not, no.
Okay, so it's a precursor to In the Realm of the Senses. It's much more restrained. It's much more kind of like in that Nikatsu Roman porno tradition. But Tanaka was very kind of peeved that his film did not receive the recognition that Oshima's did.
I know that the issue with that film, or at least for Oshima, was that because they had cast a famous pink film star as the lead, she brought her whole background to it. And he so desperately wanted to cast an unknown because, I mean, who was Abasada before she received notoriety? No one, basically, in the eyes of Japanese society. So he wanted somebody who could emulate that, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. In many respects, the film can be described as an anti-Roman porno film. It took over 3 years to reach the screen, which is a really lengthy period of pre-production and planning and rigorous rewrites, while the average Roman porno would have been like scripted, shot, and in cinemas in a matter of weeks. Tanaka's film was rarely screened outside of Japan, which is not the case for Oshima's. Oshima, there's a critical difference between his film and the Roman porno of this era. The majority of Nikatsu's Roman porno films, they take on sex, and this is what Oshima said. They take on sex, and they have themes that are related to adolescent rebellion, but sex is merely the seasoning. This old method has been used for a long time. It is precisely why these films are attractive to superficial critics and young film buffs. So the way that In the Realm of the Senses differs from these is that it rejects a voyeuristic male gaze.
It has a very female gaze.
Yes, absolutely.
And I mean, he tries very hard to depict that. I know that, I believe in your notes you mentioned there are many female voyeurs. There are so many geishas and maids peep in on the sex acts when they happen, and Sada herself, before she starts her affair with Kichi, sees him fucking his wife on multiple occasions. Yes. So,
and it's erotic, like she's turned on by it and wants him, and you're in her position, you're not in his position. And the film is, whereas the Roman porno of this era, the pink films of this era, use sex as symbolism, this film is about sex. Like, the sex is not symbolic. It is the plot. It is what it is, which I part of why I love this movie. And aside from Kichi, there are very few men in the world of this film. I just wanted to mention that the title is a direct reference to Roland Barthes' book, his book Empire of Signs, which was published in 1970, about his journeys in Japan, trying to understand the culture. Oshima, just like in that book, Oshima tries to convey the non-conveyable about Japanese sexuality in culture through film language and symbolism. The word empire, translated from French to realm, for the English title, also has its connotations of hearkening back to the era in which the film is set. So the main actors did not appear in Roman porno films, like you were saying. That was unusual at the time. But they did both kind of fade into obscurity after In the Realm of the Senses. And a good portion of the rest of the cast were familiar names in the adult film industry. It was also produced by Koji Wakamatsu, who was a famous pink film director. The film played in a heavily censored version in its theatrical release in Japan in 1976, but still caused a huge scandal. Its very existence was an affront to the assumed mores and social codes of the Japanese that the censors were there to protect. And it had been in released in Paris, where it played unedited, because hardcore porn had just been legalized in France, April 26, 1975, of course, tourist season. Soon there were stories of Japanese tourists traveling to Paris to watch this film uncut. The film was confiscated from the projection room by the police during the 1976 Berlin Film Festival and was banned before its scheduled U.S. premiere at the New York Film Festival. And it was later released uncut and was very popular in various cities that were part of the Japanese tourist itinerary in the U.S. So, and then it also was banned in London for a while, until it was awarded in 1991 there. And Oshima was acquitted of obscenity charges in 1982. So, very illustrious history this film has. So let's talk about the plot. This film opens very crazy scene with Sada at this new inn job being molested by another woman there, who works at the inn. And I guess I wanted to ask you, and she says, like, don't you like women? Go ahead.
I was going to say Sada doesn't protest, though. I mean, she kind of acquiesces to the groping. So
yeah, she's seen some shit. I kind of wanted to ask you, I don't know what I think about it, but what do you make of this opening? If anything.
Honestly, I didn't think too much of it because as a former sex worker, I know I've experienced camaraderie with fellow sex workers, and sometimes there are no boundaries and we get close, you know? Mm. And that's how I viewed the scene, because right. The other woman is like, oh, you know, I've always admired you ever since you got here. You're so elegant and all of this stuff. And so it's just a little friendly flirtation between the girls, you know?
Yeah, and it's also kind of sets up the film to be very much in this women's world that right. men are not really part of. And that's when the other woman takes Sada to spy on the innkeeper, Kichi, and his wife having sex. And there's also this, like, beautiful snowy Japanese landscape. I love how much snow there is in this film. I wanted to talk about the first sex scene and the kind of, like, general tenor of it, because this is a film where the sex scenes are very important. And it's very much, like we've been saying, focused on women's pleasure. It's like there's this close-up on Sada's face while she's watching, and she's, like, really horny.
Her lip is trembling, all of the stuff to signify she's so into it.
Yes. Like, yeah. And something that always strikes me about the way that Kichi has sex too is like he's totally like he loves women in this way. Like, he's very kind of like, do whatever you want with me, but also like I can take control when I need to. You kind of see that in this scene. What were you going to say?
I like that throughout the film, he's very concerned with the pleasure of his female partners. It's always like, you know, is this good for you?
Yes.
Time, blah blah blah, the pleasurable. There's a lot of what I like about all of the sex scenes is there's a lot of conversation around consent, like things are suggested before they're done,
right?
And oh wait, are we frozen? Hello.
Oh, I can hear you and see you, but
oh sorry. Sorry, there was a glitch.
No, you're fine.
But yeah, before anything gets too extreme, or even before anything happens, there's always some discussion, I feel,
right.
or things are moved into slowly. I also really appreciate the use of touch in the film. There's so much, they're in constant contact, Sada and Kichi. He's always touching her. I think that's very beautiful and a really fantastic way to demonstrate like how intimate they were, you know?
Yeah. And in this first sex scene too, it's like all of the, like he's being bathed by his wife and all of the sex is initiated by her. And it's just very, very much sets the tenor for all of the sex scenes. So a group of geishas from the inn, including Sada Abba, they're out doing errands and cracking dirty jokes, and they run into a group of kids poking an old passed out drunk's genitals, and there's this like look of recognition on Sada's face, and the old drunk recognizes her and as a sex worker and accosts her, and the other women like kind of throw him off. He says he was a former customer. And he tries to offer her money, and she pushes him off. And it's kind of like showing that Sada is kind of moving up in sex work culture. Like, she used to be like a quote-unquote streetwalker that would, you know, have these kinds of clients. And now she's working at she's working at an inn, which is a more, you know, safer and quote unquote respectable way to do sex work.
The real life Sada Abe moved from like geisha house to geisha house, and eventually she fell into the lower ranking ones. Mm-hmm. And so the whole reason that she came to Kichi's Inn and restaurant was because she was seeing an older professor who we are introduced to later in the film. And he was saying that she needed to get serious about her future and maybe like learn to run a restaurant. And so she finds herself at Kichi's place because she wants to learn the business.
Right.
And that's the setup. So
interesting. Yeah. And so that night she finds that old drunk and they have this kind of like gross perfunctory tryst, and there's already like so much genitalia and pubes already. I mentioned pubic hair because that's not something that you don't see that because of Japanese censorship laws.
Well, what I like about this interaction with the old man is that even though he outs her and recognizes her as like a lower sex worker, she still has all the power. There are so many just like femdom power shots from where the camera is up and she's clearly like standing tall, and the fact that the women with her push him off and she also pushes him off into the ice water, and then like later on when he's trying to get it up and can't, she's kind but also belittling.
Yeah, she's
even
like,
when he asks, when he's like, well, maybe if you show me your vagina, and she's like, God, what a pain, you know, yeah. Like, and but she does it.
Right.
And the shot is still so powerful when she unfolds her kimono, just like the frame of it is like, well, yeah, this is, you know, like I got this and you're
here
nothing.
You go.
Right.
Yeah, relatable.
Yeah.
Let's get this over with. One of the fellow geishas at the inn taunts Sada for being a whore. And they have a fight where Sada threatens to kill the woman. And this is when Kichi enters. He's got this like, it's a dog or a fox mask. Yeah. And he's carrying a branch with a lantern on it. And I couldn't find the significance of these things. And I was wondering if you had any idea.
So it's supposed to be implied that he came from a children's festival, which children show up a few times in the film uncomfortably towards the end. But mostly it's just to signify that while the film is about sex, it's about like recreational pleasurable sex and not like procreation. So
interesting
that his introduction is still tied to children. It's not about to be anything about that, you know?
Right. That's an interesting choice. He meets Sada and he tells her that she has beautiful hands and very sexy. And the next day, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, so when she quarrels with the other woman who's like, you're a whore, and she's like, oh, you think you're better than me, she picks up a knife. So there's already like the introduction of like Sada is violent and Sada will cut a bitch.
Yes.
But Kichi, he grabs her hand and he says, why hold a knife when you could be holding something else? And I love how already like flirtatious and mischievous and dashing and clearly very interested in her he is. And that's also like one of the first scenes where you see how intimate things are going to be with them, because it's the first time he touches her, he grabs her chin. And it's so like everything is already so like tactile. There's an immediate connection. It's fucking hot.
It's really hot. I'm like getting chills with you talking about it because this movie is just so hot. Like their relationship is just like just electric. And the next day, while Sada is cleaning, she's bent over and Kichi comments on her ass like, oh, great view. And he inquires about her romantic history. And this is when he like starts to like playfully molest her and try and seduce her.
But she also reciprocates the flirtation in the scene, because when he's saying like, nice view, don't stop, she backs into his hand. She backs into his hand.
Yeah, she's into it. Yeah. And she like initially rejects his advances. And this is also when I noticed that Keiichi is always singing. He's very. What do you make of that as part of his character?
So as someone who uses a lot of music in my performance art, and as someone who the person that I'm obsessed with, that the graphic novel is about, he's a music video star. And so I just see, so I know in my work, I use music to convey the themes, and a lot of the music in the realm of the senses, while Western viewers might find it difficult, I see it honestly as very contemporary. It just underscores the scene. Like my favorite lyric as far as the music goes occurs in a later scene, in the food play scene. That song starts with "a woman's pussy is her capital city," and
amazing.
And then all kinds of stuff happens then. But sorry, that's like skipping ahead. So
no, yeah, I mean, there's great lyrics in this film, and they kind of they really underscore what's going on in the scene. So Sada serves Keiichi drinks in his room, where again he, you know, sexually molests her. But it is very evident that she is interested, and the two of them have sex for the first time, where Sada is on top, or she's often on top, and a geisha for Keiichi comes to the door. This happens a lot in the film, and I was just looking into like the function of geishas in inns at this time, and it's like a very complicated system that is too complex to summarize here. But I just found that whole culture very interesting, and also is used to highlight how Keiichi is in this world of women. Like, it's not really his world, even though he is the innkeeper, and Sada does call him master.
As far as the functions of the geisha, as they relate to Sada and Keiichi, Sada was very like, she's a very chic contemporary woman, and in her interrogation she's always like, well, you know, I went here and I had two beers and I smoked some cigarettes and then I went shopping and then I got bored, so I called a geisha to entertain me. Geisha to her and Keiichi, they were just entertainment. It's not like they could pull up, you know, they can't go like, hey, Siri, play Jeremy's All the Time or whatever.
Yeah.
They were there to entertain them and get them in the mood, like our current Spotify fuck playlists,
yeah,
you know.
Like fucking porn, yeah, or anything. Like, yeah, it's really. And also that's very cool that she was like, yeah, I was having a cigarette, saw a geisha. Like, I love it. The extramarital affairs, like, between the Keiichi, and it's just not a thing. Like, it's not something you have to hide, it seems like, in this, the world of the film, at least. It's not a shameful thing. And Keiichi and Sada have another tryst where Keiichi encourages Sada to not be so frantic and to take her time. And he says, I want you to feel good. Your pleasure is enough. Which is very indicative of how he will be for the whole film in regards to Sada's pleasure. This is when I noticed that Sada has a scorpion tattoo on her ear. And I could find that the symbol of the scorpion generally, but I was wondering if you knew anything about, like, specifically scorpion tattoos and in Japan.
Right. So that tattoo isn't, the historical Sada Abe didn't have that tattoo, but the actress had that tattoo, and it was from her time in an experimental theater troupe. So they just decided not to cover it up because they felt that it indicated, as Keiichi says at one point in the film, you're a woman with a past, aren't you? And they felt that it was a nice detail that signified that.
Yeah, totally. I love that I just love that little detail. And I would love to read more about tattoos specifically in Japanese film because there is so much there. Sada questions Kichi about whether he will make love to his wife later. She says, "I won't let you go until you've come." So she's already become quite possessive. There's that amazing full-on blowjob scene where he comes in her mouth and you see the cum coming out of her mouth.
And dripping down her chin as she gazes at him intently. I fucking love it.
It's really good. Another scene where Sada is riding Kichi while she's playing a samisen, which is a traditional geisha instrument, string instrument, and she's singing. It's a prostitute's life. I just kind of love like the old school kind of like kabuki theater of it, like, you know, kind of narrating like what is actually happening through song.
Speaking of the theatricality, as far as like how the film is shot, it is shot almost like a stage production. There are a lot of static, I would say like medium long shots. It is the close-ups that lend the film its intimate feeling. But yeah, most of it is shot from afar, so you get a sense of the space.
And it's very claustrophobic, just kind of like a stage play, like very taking place in a set number of locations.
Right.
It's not like a sweeping – there are a lot of interiors.
Right.
Sada spies on Kichi's wife giving him a hair trim and approaches and asks to be given permission to leave the inn's employment. She can't handle it. She's jealous. And she runs to get the innkeeper's wife this bowl. And when she comes back, they're fucking. And while they're fucking, the wife tells Sada she doesn't want her to leave the inn because she's satisfied with her work.
You're very well behaved. There's no reason for you to leave us. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's so crazy. I was just like, I wonder what, I was wondering what the function of that scene was.
To highlight Sada's jealousy, because that's also the first time you see her hallucination where she imagines herself stabbing the wife in the neck with the razor.
Yes, and, you're right. I forgot to write that down. Yeah, she's so jealous. Yeah, that she has this fantasy. Kichi and Sada travel to another inn for a private trip. There's this scene where they're going there, and she says she's got her period, and he puts his hand in her pussy and licks her period blood, just like a real one. Indicates that Kichi is very much about that life. Like, he doesn't give a fuck. He's like, yeah, no, we're still fucking. Kichi, he undresses Sada in their room very lovingly, praising her body. One of the inn workers is spying on their passion and interrupts them to bring them sake. And that evening, which is, I think, my favorite scene in the movie, a group of geisha facilitate a ceremony for Kichi and Sada, which is like a kind of informal marriage. There's this really beautiful costuming. And there... You know, Kichi says, tonight is our wedding, so please rejoice with us, all of you. And this is when the geisha watch as Kichi fucks Sada. And as that's happening, the women say, Kosome, it's your turn. It's your turn. And the geisha start to molest what seems to be the youngest, maybe most inexperienced geisha. And they fuck her. In a way,
with a bird dildo.
With a bird dildo. Yeah. In a way that like mimics how Kichi is fucking Sada. And it's just incredible. Like, it's this just like beautiful sexual celebration. There's this crazy old guy dancing. Like, it's an orgy with its own dancer. Like, it's...
We should all be so lucky.
Right. Exactly. And Keechee is just like the luckiest dude on earth in this scene. And like, it's, yeah, and it's very, it's just very beautiful. Like, all of the women are eating each other out. Sada's giving Keechee a blowjob, very loving blowjob. And there's, Sada and Keechee are like, after this wedding scene, Sada and Keechee are, they're like binging on sex. So they're, you know, they're just, this is when it starts, they're fucking all the time. And you start to kind of lose track of time. And Sada tries to get Keechee to urinate inside of her. They also have this conversation where he says, "Are you always wet?" And she says, "I went to see a doctor and he said I'm acutely sensitive." I love the emphasis on her desire. I really do. Outside the inn, Keechee says that the only time his dick gets a rest is when he needs to piss. And Sada says like, she owns his dick. It's just so good. And like sits on it in front of this old lady outside who I love it because she's just like, "Oh, you kids." Like,
while they're fucking, Keechee like kind of shouts at her like, "Oh, hey, you're full of spunk, granny." And she's like, "I am with you two here."
It's so great. It's very celebratory, this entire movie, of sex.
Yeah.
One of the inn women delivers sake to Sada and Keechee and banters with them about how none of the younger girls will wait on them because they're always fucking. And Sada is now, she's telling Keechee that she's going to leave for a bit because she's going to see an old client because they need the money. And that is the professor that you were mentioning earlier. Keechee takes, he's so upset by this. He takes Sada from behind in front of this woman there with no regard for her presence. And the woman just leaves. And
oh, she's like, she says something like, "It's such a cruel thing to tempt a woman of my age with yes! this." Like,
it's not even like, "Oh my God, how dare you fuck in front of me?" It's just like, "God damn it!" Like, she's jealous. And Sada takes Keechee's kimono with her so that he can't leave the inn, and she gives him her robe. And she takes the train to go see her trick. And on the train, she like goes into the bathroom of the train and she smells the kimono, longing for him. And back at the inn, the inn woman from before, she's waiting on this on a forlorn Keechee and tells him that Sada will end up killing him. And then we get one of the more difficult moments of the film where not Iroh, Iroh Sada here, but Keechee rapes her, or is what I interpret as rape.
I don't quite consider it rape because depending on the type of inn that they were at, if the woman was a geisha, again, certain lower geisha, not all the geisha, they were supposed to be there for sex if that's what the customer wanted. So. Right. It's basically they're there to serve in any way.
Right. So it's like an implied blanket consent.
Right, right.
Right. That makes sense. Yeah. And I guess it's more – looking at it more that way, which is also like really – it's really important because I'm coming to these films from a Western perspective, and it is really important to watch and remember that you cannot bring that gaze to it. Like you just, you know, telling me that is something that is not like a westernized, you know, attitude towards this interaction. And in, yeah, there's just, I'm just reflecting on my own biases in watching the film. So, where am I at with my, okay. So Sada, and I, yeah, I'm reading that interaction too as like, you know, he's, you know, maybe Keiichi trying to like take back control of his dick or something, or, you know, like.
I mean, he felt a strong connection to Sada too. So I think it was just horniness, desperation, and sadness.
Like, right, right.
There were no fleshlights back in the day. This right. is the next best thing. Right. Just stick it in there. So.
Right. And also, you know, her kind of saying like, oh, she's going to kill you.
Why don't you run away?
She right, also right. He's pissed.
Yeah.
That's his lady. So Sada lies in bed with her client, who can't get hard.
Uh-uh.
And been there. she snuggles up to him, you know, saying that she really likes and respects him. And then suddenly something like overtakes her and she makes him slap her and pinch her nipples. And I guess I interpret this as like she's feeling this guilt that she's with another man who isn't Keiichi, and she needs to be brutalized. And like on the other end of that, Keiichi needs to brutalize, or maybe brutalize is a very strong word. But they're, you know, in her kind of like state, she wants violence enacted on her, and Keiichi wants to like control or, you know, fuck someone.
I also interpreted that scene as she just wants, I mean, after being with Keiichi and now she's with this significantly older man, perhaps she just wants evidence of his virility, like show me that you have something, you know, don't just lie there.
Right. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's interesting too. It's like, yeah. Yeah. Exactly what you said. Like after being in such a passionate relationship, you know, it's like going from that to this is quite an experience. The pain, it kind of inflames Sada's passion. And then she, you know, gets on top of her client and rides him with enthusiasm. And Sada returns to Keiichi and they embrace very enthusiastically. And she says, I have money. And he says, let's go spend it. So mood. post-coital, Keiichi asks Sada how it was with the professor with the trick. And she says he couldn't get hard and that she thought of Keiichi and went into hysterics. Asking him to slap her, and then Keiichi commands Sada to slap him harder and harder across the face, and this inflames their passion again, and they fuck. And Sada cries in Keiichi's arms. And then we have the scene where the food play scene where Sada sticks a mushroom in her vagina and then feeds it to Keiichi as a geisha plays for them. And you said that this is actually directly from Sada's confession.
Oh, yeah. They did this shit.
I love it.
So in the scene in the film, she says, they say true love means eating food dipped in your lover's juices. And then she takes a pair of chopsticks, takes the shiitake mushroom out of the broth, sticks it in her vagina, and he eats it. They eat it, you know. I think in her transcript, she says he initiated that. But again, because the film is so centered around her pleasure, I like that her character initiates in this scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then Keiichi like kind of runs with it and starts sticking more food in her vagina and eating it.
Yeah.
Finally culminating in this close-up shot of him sticking an egg inside of her, which she begs him to take out, but he has her like squat and push the egg out of her, and she's kind of like fake upset and in revenge holds a knife to Keiichi's dick as they have sex. and threatens to cut it off so he can't go home and fuck his wife. And she says, I want to cut it off inside me. And he's like, all right, go ahead. He says, I promise to set you up in a small inn. And she says, I don't want to be your mistress. And he says, Sada, if we lived together, I'd be reduced to a skeleton.
So this detail of her setting up an inn, again, this is from the transcript where basically she was a little frustrated with him because he didn't want to leave his wife because they ran a business together. He didn't feel anything for her. She had cheated on him. And that's why he was so open about his womanizing. He just felt like, well, there's just, you know, like culturally men could just fuck whoever, but there's just something, it's such an affront when a woman cheats on a man. Mm-hmm. So, but he wanted to be with Sada for a long time, again, with her as his side bitch. He just thought that maybe if she started her own business, then, you know, he would have a place to go. And that wasn't at home at the business with his wife.
Right.
He thought that they could sustain themselves that way. Because as you mentioned in the earlier scene where as soon as she got money, he was like, let's spend it. They were very frivolous about spending their money. They wanted to have a good time. So,
hey, that's my life philosophy. I think this is why I love their characters so much, is they're just like, YOLO, like, let's, mm-hmm. you know, we have money now. Let's fuck and drink and have a good time. Harass right. strangers on mm-hmm. the street. Sada cuts off a tuft of Kichi's pubic hair and eats it. Again, Sada threatens Kichi into saying he'll never make love to his wife again. And there's like this really beautiful scene where they're walking in the rain together under this parasol, and they bully a woman together by chasing her. And, you know, she says, why don't you make love to her? And he says, she's not my type. And this is when we start seeing their, like, carelessness about other people, which to me indicates that they're lost in each other. They're not occupied with anyone else outside of each other. And they're descending into depravity. They're starting to not see anybody outside their relationship as – they don't care. They only care about each other.
Well, when you build that sex cocoon, right. it's hard to leave the sex cocoon.
Right. And Sada taunts a vendor also by flashing him. She says, you can have me if you give us a drink. And then one of my favorite moments where Kichi eats Sada out in the rain as she says, never leave me. This is the scene I notice always kind of disturbs people, the next scene. Where Sada is playing with the naked children at the inn, and she attacks the little boy, pulling on his penis. So I wanted to hear your thoughts a little bit about this scene, if you have any.
That seems a little difficult for me also. So I guess... just because I have my own experiences with childhood trauma, and a lot of people in my life are survivors of childhood sexual assault. Like, I don't want to undermine what anybody else might be feeling about this scene, but within the context of the film, I think it just shows that none of the other men in Sada's life, or like in her view, are as masculine as Kichi to her. Because again, every other dick that we see, even in the sequence with the food vendor, when she taunts him, he says, my dick isn't good for anything but peeing anymore. So literally everybody else, every other man in the film is shown as impotent except for Kichi.
Right.
So, I mean, the old bum can't get it up. Her older professor lover is also inadequate in bed. literally every other man has like erectile function issues. And right. even this little boy, like, doesn't mean anything to her. It's nothing, you know, like, so
yeah,
it could also be, maybe it's serving to highlight her preoccupation with male genitalia, or again, it's ominous because it foreshadows what is to come.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's sort of what I was thinking. And again, shows the disregard that they have for the bodies of other people at this point. And foreshadowing the castration, which everybody, the people who were watching this film would have been familiar with the story. Mm-hmm. So that is, yeah, that's, yeah, a lot of people find this scene really upsetting. I couldn't find anything about the children specifically and how this scene was handled or how it came to be. It's always hard on this podcast to talk about children's sexuality and representation in film, just because I am of the belief that things that happen in life need to be explored in film.
Right.
And child sexual abuse happens in life. And yeah, I don't know. It's almost, I wouldn't take the scene out of the film, even though it is upsetting. It really adds to the way that we're supposed to be looking at the characters at this point. Is like, she's just not rational at this point
right.
anymore. And
I think it also, oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I think it also once again serves to affirm that the sex that they're having is for recreation, not procreation. So to like every time there are children in the movie, of which they're only there a few times, it's just to show, well, I mean, normally people or whatever heterosexual couples have sex and they make babies, but that is not what Sada and Kichi are doing.
Right.
So.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. All of that. So back at the home inn, the wife startles Kichi while he's shaving and asks if he's going to go back to Sada, and he cuts himself and bleeds and she licks it. And these women just like want to consume him. Kichi is singing again as his wife bathes him, and she straddles Kichi and they have sex, even though he promised Sada that he would not. And Kichi goes back to Sada, who accosts him with a knife, brandishing it at him, questioning if he had sex with his wife. She says, "You think I'm crazy because I can't stop thinking about you." And it's interesting because in the beginning of their relationship, Kichi was more of the aggressor, and now Sada is definitely the aggressor, like holding a blade to his erect penis. But he only smiles and says, "Give him a good punishing." And he begs her forgiveness while he's inside of her. They experiment with choking each other, which is, I think, maybe the hottest scene in the movie. I was also noticing that the actress has these scars on her stomach, which the actress probably just had, but they in this context, like I was thinking about sex work and how this could imply like some kind of abortion or child like miscarriage or yeah something. Her body is it's beautiful, but it's marked with the things that she's experienced in her life.
Right.
So one of the inn workers comes in and says that no geisha will come in because of their reputation, and Sada naked attacks her and slapping her over and over. She's like totally lost it. Kichi holds her back and she says, "I want you to fuck her," and Kichi like talks her out of it. But then the couple has sex, as in older geisha plays for them. And Sada talks to her while they have sex. And she says, "You don't mind?" And she says, "It's a feast for the eyes." And Sada asks the older geisha to let Kichi make love to her. And Kichi and the older woman, this is maybe one of the very few sex scenes in film where I've ever seen an older woman. Kichi and the older woman have sex while Sada watches.
And Sada actually asks the older woman if she wants to fuck Kichi. Yes. And there's a twinkle in her eye. Yes, I love it.
I do too. All about it. She's like, "I want to watch. I want to see." And while the old lady is passed out afterwards, they talk about their dead mothers, which is heavily symbolic in relation to this older geisha. And Sada says, "Let's be happy together forever." She goes to see the professor again, who dismisses her because he says she smells like a dead rat. So all of the things that are happening are like indicating that Sada is completely like engrossed in this relationship and is like maybe neglecting her hygiene. Like she's going down this like twisted little rabbit hole completely. This was interesting to me, where she asks the professor if they can go away together. And he says, if anyone knew they were together, he'd shoot himself. I was wondering, like, what do we make of this about her relationship with him?
So he was a member of the historical figure that character is based on was a member of the Diet, the Japanese parliament, and a city council member, and just an upstanding member of society. Sada describes him as that. And I don't know, like at one point, Kichi just jokes about it, like, "Oh, you like him upstanding, don't you?" And, you know, I believe in that scene when she's riding him or whatever. There are lots of jokes about being upstanding in this film.
So many boner jokes.
But yeah, I think that the sequence helps us align emotionally with Kichi. Like he loves Sada. He doesn't disrespect her like that. And it doesn't matter to him that she's a woman with a past. He's so enamored of her. Whereas this other man is still too cautious, doesn't want to be seen publicly with her, doesn't want to acknowledge her publicly. It's a difficult situation for any woman, especially someone who has done sex work, to be in. Like
I really like that interpretation of just every man being there to contrast with Kichi. And yeah, like Kichi is not ashamed of Sada. Like when she brings money back from having done sex work, he's like, "Let's spend it." Like it's not, yeah, there's no shame there. There is that scene where Kichi is like walking down the street and with like a smile on his lips, probably thinking about Sada, and he passes these military soldiers, which Oshima saw the Sada incident as symptomatic of the madness of this era, which I believe the case happens in 1936.
Yes.
And which is, if I'm correct, the Showa era. And it occurred, so the incident occurred a few months after the thwarted military coup known as Nairoku 226, named after the date it took place, 26th February 1936. So this scene with this nod to that is reflecting the politics of the time. And you know, showing the turmoil of the era.
It's also to show how disinterested Kichi and Sada it's also to show how disinterested Kichi and Sada are about the politics of the time. Like the country was veering towards nationalism, but they were all about themselves. Yes. Which is for a country that is not exactly about individualism. I mean, it's so subversive. They yes. were very, very subversive.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's part of why she was viewed as such a national hero in Japan because everything she was about was so completely different from what was going on at the time. She was just, I don't know. Yeah. There's something about her that's still so contemporary and so modern.
Yeah.
And something about the story that's so contemporary and modern.
Absolutely. And I have a thought, but I'll bring it up at the end when the actual castration happens. So she tackles, when he returns back to their room, Sada tackles Kichi with a knife and he says he only went out for a haircut. And Kichi just kind of like rolls with her insanity. Like, he's really not fazed by it. And Sada takes off this gorgeous purple kimono to reveal a red kimono, my favorite outfit change of the film. She's got this knife between her teeth and this like very iconic shot, and she mounts Kichi and he laughs and she says, "Do you want me to strangle you?" And he says, "No, but if it gives you pleasure." And there's like some explicit penetration. And Sada rides Kichi while strangling him with the purple robe sash. And Kichi implores her to pull tighter with the sash. And then Sada ties his hands together. So like you were saying, the real Kichi and Sada, like they did start to get into BDSM. Mm-hmm. And she ties his hands together. She's strangling him. She really enjoys strangling him.
In the interrogation record, they made her identify all the sash cords. And she was like, "Oh, yes, this peach one is when I strangled him on February 16th. This purple one was when I did this on this date." It's pretty wild.
I'm obsessed with that. That's amazing. Yeah. And like we haven't even talked about like color symbolism in this film. There's just so much. There's so much color. And yeah, the purple and revealing the red, and like how her emotional state changes depending on what color she's in.
Right.
And he says, this goes on forever where she's like riding him and strangling him. And he says, "Don't worry about me. Just enjoy yourself." And she says, "Even if I kill you?" And he consents. And Sada keeps strangling him and riding him. And she orgasms and they embrace. And later, Kichi tells Sada to get on top of him again, even if he can't keep it up. And he begins to fall asleep as they have sex, like totally spent. He tells Sada that if she strangles him again, don't stop this time. It's too painful afterwards. And she ties the kimono cord around his neck carefully and warns him before she's about to strangle him. And she has this hallucination where she's in this amphitheater. And this is the second incident I can think of where there's like a departure from reality. And the other one I'm thinking of is the one earlier where she's fantasizing about slicing the wife's neck. We've talked about this movie being very like theater based. So it's interesting that that happens. There's this amphitheater scene and there's also the children again playing Ready or Not. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts about this scene.
I think as far as the fantasy, there's this contrast between the innocence that it depicts. Well, I mean, it's not even quite, because in this outdoor amphitheater, she's on a slab masturbating, right? Kids are running around her. They're not even paying attention to her.
I feel like it's the culmination of all of these things we've been talking about. Like, it's, you know, that kind of the being on display, the theatrical nature of the entire film. And then the, you know, she's also like, it's interesting too, because in this moment, she's always so present in her sex scenes and with Kichi. And this is like the one moment where she like leaves and
she disassociates.
Yes.
Part of me read the scene as, again, so she was raped when she was young. And so I think there's something about it that to me conveys a sort of innocence lost. Like, she's a woman living this life now, but she could have been, you know, she came from, I would say, kind of a middle-class family, and her mom spoiled her, like gave her everything she wanted. And even when she was raped, the mom was like, oh, just, the mom was trying to downplay it. She gave her, you know, like musical instruments and new clothes and everything. And she always said it was going to be fine, but Sada knew, you know, nobody would want to marry her, touch her, be with her, because she was tarnished, mm-hmm. In the eyes of the culture at that time. And I don't know. I think in her head, as much as she wanted to be with Kichi and as much as she wanted a future together, there's the sense that she couldn't have that. So all of these things, like seeing the children, it's not just the loss of her innocence, but also the loss of a prospect for a future.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So we're back in the room, and Sada's back from her fantasy, and she has killed Kichi, and she's in shock. And the other thing I wanted to talk about in this scene is Kichi's consenting to death. And I find this, like, extremely subversive, obviously. And like you were saying earlier, this individualism, this right to be destroyed by sex, and how controversial that idea still is of, like, wanting or consenting to be totally destroyed. And yeah, I don't really have any, I don't have more to say about that, but it's just something I am thinking about. It is the consent aspect of it as it is portrayed in the film, regardless of how it was in real life. So she takes a knife and she castrates him. And it's extremely graphic. We see it happen. And she writes in blood on his body, right? Is Sada and Kichi forever?
Yeah.
And this voiceover tells of how Sada carried his organ all over Japan in her purse with a serene look on her face. Is there anything else about the case that you wanted to say? That the film ends here, and it is just, yeah, one of the most jarring endings, because it's been so loving in so many ways, but there has also been a lot of foreshadowing about it. So it's not, it's like a surprise, but it's also not. It's so shocking and graphic, but it's also like you've kind of been waiting for it the whole time.
I love the ending, despite Oshima's clinical narration at the end, which is very like, well, I'm a historian now, and here's how we're going to excuse the film, and maybe this will get it by the censors, because right. I'm saying this is history.
Right, right.
But, you know, to me, the ending is so beautiful. And when I think about it, I also think about other real life similar cases, or like couples who did similar things. So say like Sid and Nancy, how Vicious notoriously in real life and in the film carved Nancy's name on his chest. Like, he cut into himself. I think about like Amy Winehouse and Blake, how they would cut into each other and shit like that all the time. But it's just more cases of historical obsessive love that I just think are so beautiful and wonderful, to be like so brazen about each other and your affection to the other person. And yeah, sorry.
Right. I mean, it's like there's so much to gush over in this film. I mean, the thing that was striking me was the act of castration as like the final act of worship, because she can't bear to be parted with his penis. Whereas there's so many horror and exploitation films where castration is like a revenge, the rape victim's vengeance. Or I'm even thinking about like a Western example of Lorena Bobbitt Like that's very much about like the woman's, the battered woman like takes revenge. And this is such a different portrayal of castration, where and I actually, like, I don't know what the technical word is, because I think castration is technically only cutting off somebody's testicles.
Balls.
Yeah. Yeah, so there has to be another word for when you cut off the whole thing, but it's, yeah.
Dismemberment?
Dismemberment. I mean, yeah, it is. Yeah.
In the interrogation, she said that, I mean, again, she was very irritated that people, because of this, saw her as a pervert or a sex maniac or anything. And she was like, you know, if you know anything about my history, that should answer the question for you. And by that, she meant, you know, like, I was a rape victim. I've been through all of this fucking shit. Like, no, I really cared about this man. And she said that she did it because, again, she loved him very much. And she wanted to keep the part of him that was most important to her. So,
yes. Yeah, and yeah, exactly. And that's why this portrayal of a penis being cut off is so different than so many other films where this extremely taboo thing is depicted. So that was In the Realm of the Senses. I loved talking about this film with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Where can everybody find you on social media?
I'm on Twitter at Donna Uwana, and I'm on Instagram at Donica Uskert, which I guess I can spell it. It's DanicaUskert. My website is filmandfishnet.com. And I'm also on TikTok, but I don't need to plug that. So
I love that you're on TikTok. I'm still trying to understand TikTok, but I very much enjoy looking at the app. So yeah, everybody follow Donica. I will tag you when I publish the episode. And you know where to find me, Girls Guts Giallo, Twitter and Instagram, patreon.com/girlsgutsgiallo. And this ends my month-long dive into Japanese sex cinema. And thank you again, Donica.
Thank you.